The Energy Nightmare of the Internet, Jane Ann Morris.
People have calculated how many gallons of water it takes to produce a hamburger, and they don't all agree on the numbers, but they're really into this. So first of all, I wonder, why aren't people asking that same kind of question about clicking a search? Why don't we pay attention to what's happening when we click something or when we upload a bunch of pictures?
Jane Ann Morris began searching for that number in the early 2000s. She wrote an article on the energy nightmare of web server farms in 2008 and discovered that, quote, in 2007, at Google's urging, Oklahoma rewrote its open records law to allow data center owners to conceal from the public the amount of electricity used, end quote. Jane Ann Morris kept her research going until 2012, when she calculated how many bicycles would be needed to keep the internet supplied with green power. The article is Eat, Sleep, Click, the Bicycle-Powered Internet. And you get more details in the upcoming interview. Numbers are now easier to come by, and they are staggering and growing. The Swedish Royal Institute of Technology in 2018 published their research, quote, around 10% of the world's total electricity consumption is being used by the internet. A news feature in the journal Nature from September 2018 says, the five biggest global corporations by market capitalization this year are Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Facebook. Replacing titans such as Shell and ExxonMobil, as demand for internet and mobile phone traffic skyrockets, the information industry could lead to an explosion in energy use. And another quote. Already, data centers use an estimated 200 terawatt hours each year. That is more than the national energy consumption of some countries. One of the most worrying models predicts that electricity used by information and communications technology could exceed 20% of the global total by the time a child born today reaches her teens. End quote. This and more in the September 2018 article in the journal Nature. Jane Ann Morris, author of Gaveling Down the Rabble, How Free Trade is Stealing Our Democracy, 2008, and Anthologized in Defying Corporations, Defining Democracy, in 2001. Was a researcher, writer, and workshop leader with POCLAD, the Program on Corporations, Law, and Democracy. She was only 65 when she died in May 2019. And this program is a tribute to her work. On March 1st, 2013, my friends Annie Esposito and Steve Scalmanini interviewed Jane Ann Morris on their radio program, Corporations and Democracy, on KZYX in Mendocino County, California.
Our guest is Jane Ann Morris. So let's talk about the energy nightmare of the internet.
Thank you for having me.
You often hear people saying that the internet is great because they're not using all these reams of paper anymore. You can get your agendas online and they pay their bills online and so it must be really good, right?
Yeah, I hear that a lot. You know, bank online, it's clean and green and so on. I should tell you I spent close to a decade fighting against strip mining in Texas. And as a result of that, had to learn about power plants and electricity and conservation and grids and all this. And that just made me very sensitive to how much energy, specifically electricity, I was using whenever I did something. So I developed this 3-point questionnaire. Every time I was going to do something or support a project, I asked myself 3 things. Number 1, what's its effect on my community? Number two, what's its effect on the possibility of democracy? And number three, what is its effect on the environment, in this case, energy usage? So I always knew that the Internet must be using some energy, and I was surrounded by people during the first years after 2000, when it was becoming really something everyone was on, saying, oh, the Internet, it's free, it's clean, it's, you know, humming, and all of a sudden I said, you know, it's not without an energy and environmental cost, and people looked at me like I was nuts. So I eventually wrote my first article about it, which came out in about winter of 2008, which was the energy nightmare of web server farms. And then last year I was asked to update that for Earth First Journal in 2012. So, yeah, I've written those two articles on it, which is the result of quite a long time of being obsessed. Why aren't people worried about this?
Well, the research you did is really very dramatic when you come to the figures that you've unearthed. And another thing, a point that you make, all this energy impact is invisible to people. They might be using this little tiny handheld device, right? And you can't really see the damage that's being created, you know, maybe in another part of the country somewhere because of what you're doing right at that moment. Do you want to talk a little bit about the invisibility factor here?
Yes, I would like to. One of the points I make in the second article is that people are obsessed with food now, all across the board. And I love food, too, and I grow much of my own and try and eat locally and so on. But people have calculated how many gallons of water it takes to produce a hamburger. And they don't all agree on the numbers, but they're really into this. So first of all, I wonder, why aren't people asking that same kind of question about clicking a search? And they're apparently not. But I think a better way to talk about it, and this seems truer to me as the years go on, is the analogy to the car. Now, when the car was first introduced, it was considered something that was neat and fun and exciting and near miraculous, and people repeatedly said it was democratizing and it was about freedom, and it was just this great thing. The effects, which we now know, are enormous energy use at various levels, huge amount of pollution, and that we've completely changed our infrastructure, both physically, you know, gas pumps, interstate highways, and culturally. No more horses, roads all over the place, neighborhoods oriented toward cars and so on. So this is just a great example from our past. And right now, I see people doing almost identical things in their attitude toward the Internet. It's supposed to be neat, fun, exciting, near miraculous, and democratizing and about our freedom, okay? And it seems clean and, you know, free of problems and so on. And I think if we remember the lessons that we should have learned with the car, and just apply that same set of questions to the Internet, you know, we might pay more attention.
The point about the car that you make, that how dependent you become, I certainly have become dependent on the Internet at this point. You know, the things that I have to do it that way. Now you just rearrange everything so that when you do decide, oh, this is not working, you're kind of stuck. So I'm glad that we have you here to kind of run this down for people, because you have some really interesting statistics that blow me away. Do you want to start by talking about how big this problem is?
One quote I got was someone who said basically that if the Internet were a country, and this was a couple years ago, if the Internet were a country, it would be the fifth biggest power consumer, ahead of India and Germany. Okay, and most of the figures you get on this, and I'm not going to cite specific numbers because they're already out of date and because they're meaningless, but it's an absolutely enormous consumer of power, and that's because of the data centers and server farms, which are gigantic buildings, sometimes as large as several football fields, that are all over the world, including in small towns, in the middle of the planes and so on, that house all the computers that keep all this stuff we keep uploading into the cloud, onto the Internet. They have to be kept in computers. And it has to be kept, much of it, very accessible, so we can have a search, so I can search something in 3.2 seconds and so on. And also, they're multiply backed up. Whatever company's doing it, and it could be your friend in their garage, and it could be Google, but they back up what they have. And then many people have independent backups when they back up what's on their email accounts or what's on their own computers and so on. And it's like a hall of mirrors all over the place, the number of times this stuff is on a machine someplace. plus the computers that they use to store this stuff typically use half their power to keep those electrons accessible and the other half the power to keep themselves cool. I described them in my first article as a server is essentially a refrigerator wrapped around an electric stove.
So I know you didn't want to use numbers, but because they're out of date already, but I think it's interesting just to give people, you know, an idea of the scope. You say that one click for a search activates 7,000 computers around the world.
Okay, and in the second article, I say between 1,000 and 20,000. And these are just from estimates that I have read other people give for what happens. And you can click the identical search, Democracy Theme Park, which is my website. You can click the same search in the same way twice, and it will probably be routed in different ways. Basically, my click has to be routed from wherever I am through whatever kinds of cables or airwaves we have, essentially to whatever company I'm using as a browser and so on, to their server farms or data centers. And so it just involves huge numbers. I've never seen a number less than 1,000, and I've seen numbers as high as 20,000 in it.
One of the things you have is a major search engine demands as much energy as 5 million homes. This is, it's really stupendous, the multiplication of when you do one click, what happens?
Yes, it is. And, you know, you can have a data center in a closet and it doesn't use much electricity, but the big ones, and there are big ones, they tend to be in, you know, real ugly cement-looking buildings with all kinds of power things attached to them and not a lot of labels because there are security issues. But, yes, they can use, you know, for server farms or data centers, numbers are like 20 megawatts, 50 megawatts, 100 megawatts, and that sort of thing, which is getting pretty high into the megawatt category. The peak use in Las Vegas in the summer of 2007 was 5,600 megawatts. Okay, Madison's peak a few years ago was a little over 700 megawatts. So we're talking a huge scale. If one server farm can be 100 megawatts, and there are, I don't know how many tens or hundreds of thousands of server farms around the world, and they're starting to put many of them in places, poor places in India, where I heard of one case where they even were going to have a couple nuclear power plants solely devoted to running server farms, or data centers there, huge ones for some of the biggest internet companies, and that the local people, if they could even afford to consider buying electricity from there, would be paying 10 times as much as the company was paying. And this is typical. Just if I can go into this just a minute, what they end up paying for electricity. My electricity bill, I always pay between 20 and 35 cents per kilowatt hour. And the more I use, the less I pay per kilowatt hour. Now, my electricity bill this last time was around 60-some kilowatt hours, and I paid over 30 cents per, okay? When these companies within the United States set up these giant data centers, they get big deals, like they do on often a complete exemption from numerous kinds of property and other taxes. But the rates they pay for their electricity are sometimes as low as 2 to 4 cents and often in the 4 to 6 to 7 cent range. So they're paying, you know, vastly less than like normal humans trying to get by in their homes or apartments.
Yeah, so they get cut rate electric bills, and they also get breaks on property taxes, costing states where they're located huge loss in tax revenue.
Yes, the state of Iowa was nice enough, I quote this in one of my articles, Iowa was nice enough to even calculate its tax losses per year and to say, you know, how much... how much we're losing each year by giving all these tax breaks, and they were considerable.
It's like millions, right? It's
They calculated that, and the list of things they were giving tax breaks to is everything from cooling systems, cooling towers, temperature control infrastructure, substations, transformers, et cetera, and they calculated their tax losses as $3.6 million in 2009, $12.7 million in 2010, $22 million in 2011 and $32.7 million in 2012. These are states giving deals to these big companies, which hardly hire any workers and use huge amounts of subsidized electricity.
Good grief. We have a phone call. Do you want to take a call?
Sure.
Hello, you're on the air with Jane Ann Morris.
Hi, I have two questions, please. Has she made a differentiation between personal use versus military, corporation, government use as to how much electricity is being used. And the second question I have is, knowing that everybody's kind of locked into this, what does she know about any new energy coming online that may alleviate the situation with the environment?
Okay, you got that?
Several people have written books on the internet in the last few years and done research. For example, for my second article, someone estimated that 94% of all emails are spam. That was in 1996. 2 years ago, the estimate was that 90% of all email is still spam. People have reason to believe that up to a quarter of all searches are for porn. It takes 12 million messages to sell $100 worth of Viagra. supposedly, 100 million photos are uploaded daily, and Google handles over a billion searches per day. Fantasy football people spend 2.4 billion hours online per football season, and so on. So in things like that, I think we can see that there's a huge, you know, what you might call commercial use, and some people I've had tell me it's just crap. But whatever it is, if my government and my taxes and my work is going to subsidize a huge system, I would like some say on what it's used for. You can think of an analogy to the interstate highway system. It's subsidized at so many levels, as is the internal combustion engine, and theoretically, we should have some say of how that is used. So what was the second one about energy sources, new energy sources?
Yeah, is there new energy sources to support it?
Okay, well, in my second article, I realized that, okay, when I would say this to people and finally get them to grudgingly acknowledge that, yeah, maybe it's using a lot of electricity, and it's using so much that Google got Oklahoma to rewrite their laws so Google wouldn't have to reveal how much energy it was using, by the way. So they definitely don't want this out. Yes. People would say two things to me when I convinced them that it might be potentially a problem. The first one is, oh, but it's so efficient now. Okay. And my point there is that efficiency is not the same as low use. And Stanley Jevons wrote a book, he's pretty famous, called The Coal Question in 1865, to look at the relationship between the efficiency of the use of a resource and the amount of that resource that was used. And he found that, contrary to what a lot of people think, the more efficiently it's used, the more of it is used. And you can look at all kinds of examples nowadays to suggest that that's still true.
Yeah,
frankly,
freeways.
The use is not going... Yes, right. Let's build another lane there. It's not going down. And the issue is how much we're using, you know, how much coal we're burning, how many nukes we have, whatnot, not the efficiency of it. So I think efficiency is good, don't get me wrong, but that's not the solution, and we shouldn't just think that efficiency is our only goal. And the second thing is, the second article I wrote last year, Eat, Sleep, Click, in Earth First, the second thing people tell me, first efficiency, the second thing they tell me is, oh, but the wind power, solar, man, alternative energy, you know, I don't know, burning grass clippings or whatever. And so in this article, I specifically addressed that. I said, okay, you want to generate this much electricity with green. And the first thing I did was calculate how much it would take using a bicycle generator. A person on a bicycle, which can generate like 100 watts an hour. So it would take four people per bicycle to do this 24/7, give them six-hour shifts. How many bicycles it would take to generate the world power that we use on the internet. And again, these are out of date. Okay. For the 200 billion kilowatt hours for world internet use.
You ended up with 8 billion peddlers or something?
Oh, yeah, right. That is. In order to power the current world internet as of 2010 or 2012, estimated by people who tend to be conservative, using bicycle power, it would take over 8 billion people pedaling bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
And for just to bring it down to scale, there's a fairly modest-sized data center in Chicago. It uses more megawatts than O'Hare Airport. And that's supposedly it draws 100 megawatts. And in order to do that by bicycle, it would take an area three times the size of Chicago, just for bicycles, to generate electricity for the one fairly modest-sized data center within the city.
Let me mention to listeners that our topic today is the energy nightmare of the internet, And we're talking with Jane Ann Morris, corporate anthropologist and author of Gaveling Down the Rabble, How Free Trade is Stealing Our Democracy.
Many people who are always on the internet, it really doesn't matter the tiny amount that you're using to keep your little home computer with the blue screen and the chimes going. Because every time you do the simplest search, do an email, you are activating tens of thousands of computers all over, all of which are kept in these data centers. But the personal side of it is not the least of it, because these are subsidized, the whole system, the whole internet system, through the companies that have bandwidth, through all the search engine companies, through the electric companies that are, you know, getting away with horrible things like fracking and blowing the tops of mountains off in order to provide the electricity that these companies are getting cheaply. So we have a really heavily publicly subsidized system. And most of us have very little impact on how that system is used. And I think maybe our personal use, you know, putting up pictures of strip mining or of fracking or getting people to sign petitions and so on, is probably an incredibly tiny amount of it, if anything that I've read is a suggestion. But again, I don't know anyone who has that information. If they did, they probably wouldn't want it out there. The fact of the matter is that what we're doing in accepting the fact that it's out there and I'm going to use it and my use of it is okay because all I have is a few articles and no bouncing bunnies, okay, no moving things which take much, much more electricity. We've left off the question of, the analogy I use is, it's like subsidizing a gigantic Walmart the size of a city because there's 6 feet of organic spinach on one shelf. And at some point, we really have to think of what we're all and all of our governments are doing to subsidize this whole system up there with absolutely no limits on it. I know people hate censorship. I'm a teacher, a writer, and an activist. There's no one who hates censorship more than I do. But what we're saying is that there are no rules at all. Overwhelmingly, it is used for commercial stuff and, you know, as people have told me, stuff that is obviously crap. And I'm not even judging your 3,000 photos of your cat looking cute that is now on the internet bouncing back and forth in everyone's emails and the backups of the emails and the backups of the backups. So we need to face this whole system the way we didn't face the system of the car and say, what are the implications of just going gung-ho, paving everything, reorganize our community so we can go to drive-in churches and so on and so forth. And as someone suggested to me, and I put in my second article, we are still at the Model T stage of the Internet.
Yikes.
And let's try to apply some of the lessons that we didn't learn quickly enough with the car.
Uh-huh.
So it's part of a larger thing of, like, what really should we do? So I guess the first thing I'd say is, I use the Internet like I use a car, which I don't own, and I've been a lifetime bicycle commuter, and I do it year-round here in Madison, Wisconsin, where we just got 5 more inches of snow. I use the Internet only when it's absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So that means I circulate cat pictures if I had any by hand. You know, it's not on the Internet. So take it as seriously as you do when you get into a car with all we know about its implications. Second thing is on your own storage. Frankly, hard copy works. I still have a few books around. Secondly, if you need to store a lot of stuff, use a flash drive or disks or your hard drive. You know, it doesn't have to be up in the cloud. And also have to ask ourselves, why is it important to store all these things? And that's where, like, just in terms of self-control, the cat pictures come online. If people had any idea, I mean, we know, pick a place, Afghanistan, Nigeria, West Virginia, people are dying and suffering horrible environmental consequences every second while we upload all those cat pictures, frankly. Nothing personally against cats, okay, here. That's all at the personal level, but I don't want us to lose that we do need to go beyond this. Someone needs to think about if we actually operated the Internet in a way that was responsible and put our values into practice, because we're maintaining it at such a cost to our environment, to future generations, to the future health of the earth, and so on. What would we put on it, and how would we decide? It's hard. Right now, people are thinking like, oh, it's so free and everything, and it is to a large extent, nearly, for many of us today. But we are taking all those consequences and putting them onto future generations of people and life on Earth.
So how do you go about trying to rein this in? I mean, where do we start? Where do you start to try to tame the beast?
Well, not to sound too boring, but education will help. I was a part of a video project to go around to coffee shops and ask people, who are all glued to their laptops and handhelds, by the way, what's going on there? What happens? And I have never gotten so many blank looks on a question in my life. It's just, not only did no one know, but no one was even thinking about it, and no one cared. Now, we're not quite there, although we're advancing very quickly, to building our lives around the infrastructure of the Internet, including destroying local businesses, local bookstores. There are a lot of people in my apartment building who never shop for anything. They just get all these boxes delivered, and they sit up there ordering things, food, whatever. So, first of all, people need to realize this. And, you know, I'm pleased. This is the first time I've had a chance to talk about this on the radio, and I'm really pleased for it because we need to think about it, not just say, oh, yeah, and just click some more. You know, it's about all of us. So I guess that's the first level. And then hopefully more people will be thinking about this. Well, if this is just a really horrible, scary way of doing it, how should we do it without eliminating the Internet altogether, which may in fact happen at some future point when we don't have the cheap energy we have now?
That's right. We have another call.
Okay.
Hello, you're on the air.
When she touched on the tax subsidies, were those municipal or federal?
The ones I talked about and that I quoted earlier were state subsidies, you know, the things that states and municipalities do to get companies to come in. There's many levels of subsidies, and one subsidy people don't often consider is the fact that, frankly, not a tiny fraction of our environmental laws in the United States are actually enforced. And that constitutes a subsidy of all these energy sources. If the nuclear plants and the coal plants and all the oil pipelines were actually required to meet all on the books environmental regulations, they would be super expensive, which is why they're not enforced. So I have two articles. One is Eat, Sleep, Click. That's in Earth First. And the early one was called The Energy Nightmare of Server Farms. And they both can be gotten at through my website, which has no bouncing bunnies, and it's called democracythemepark.org, and a lot of other stuff there. And so a lot of these numbers are in there and specific references to different kinds of subsidies.
Okay, we are out of time.
Right. Well, I had a great time, and thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate you raising this issue.
That was a tribute in memory of Jane Ann Morris. Thanks to Annie Esposito and Steve Scalmanini, who interviewed her on their radio program, Corporations and Democracy, on KZYX in Mendocino County, California, on March 1, 2013. Jane Ann Morris died in May 2019, but her website, democracythemepark.org, is being maintained by her friends. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.